Hi, my name is Adrienne Chambon. What has struck me as I was listening to you, and maybe it is, I think, it's in pursuance to the previous point, but maybe not. It's very difficult to talk about, I mean, we are the audience right now. How do you address to an audience right now issues of trauma, of what cannot be said, what cannot be shown, what each of us has experienced maybe? And it struck me several times I became sort of agitated at the containment of the presentations, which is always true in any conference setting, and I know this is not a conference, but nevertheless, the architecture of the dividing lines between the presenters and the listeners, between the light that was too strong at some point or that is too soft, how we listen to or how we heard. And it seems, I'm just thinking of my own work, which I'm doing now with groups of people, in which what we're trying to do in relationship to something like trauma, and I'm getting more and more bothered by the word trauma, which is sort of being used, and right now I don't even want to use that word anymore. But it's what if when we present or we address an audience or a new group, we would need to address what's happening in the moment with the audience in the room and what's happening politically around us. At some point, you showed one of the artists' work with the names of the artists circulating, you know, spiraling. And I saw the name David, but I read it Daoud, right? And at some point you talked of Israel, and there was a slippage of words. And we can't help, but I can't help, but think of what's happening right now in the Middle East. Now, I'm not saying we have to transform this into, aha, and what's happening now in the Middle East. But there is something about if we do not have little slippages, if we contain what we talk about while we're talking about trauma, what is it exactly that we're doing when we're doing it? And there was a point of time when you spoke and showed the Jenny Holzer piece that I realized I was stretching my feet and wanted to take my shoes off. I wanted to feel the ground. I wanted to be engaged, and I was engaged in a different way. And when you talked about non-closure in the same way. So that when one talks about trauma, there's an event that's happening, the event of language, of non-visual, as a choice of language, was visual, was it choosing the two, but what's the event that we're trying to produce here without closing it off, if you'd like?
Yes, we'll answer to that. See, Vera, we're all.
Is this on? I don't have an answer. I spoke out of my own experience and an experience that I thought we might share. No, I didn't situate what I was saying in relation to world events. And I came to appreciate the containment that my colleagues brought to the material that they were showing us. Although there were moments when I felt, God, art historians have all the answers, you know, they talk as if they know. But they do know. And I'm sorry you felt, I mean, if you did feel that we weren't relating to you, but I'm not, you know, that's not what you felt. Okay, but you just wanted to raise it. Okay.
When you said about the name, did you mean the Dreiblatt piece? Yes? Yes. I think Caro's notions, of course, about trauma and particularly that, you know, we don't own history. We don't own our own histories and we don't own our own traumas, that, you know, we're implicated in those of others. I mean, that whole notion is something that is deeply resonant with what is going on right now. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that just ever so slightly, but certainly would hope that we would be set up some kind of resonance, not only with what's happening right now, but I mean the whole foundation of the Americas. I mean, how we are all here together has a great deal to do, you know, with the migrations of trauma.
Now, I thought you were commenting on Sharon's question, which hasn't been answered, and I don't feel confident to answer it, partly because I was working through part of Irit's presentation and I didn't hear the part you're referring to. But does somebody else want to talk about the relationship of Irit Rogoff's ideas to what we've been talking about? Irit.
I'm Irit Rogoff, and I'm not going to do the work of trying to drag the theoretical model across, you know, other.
Could you speak louder? We don't hear you very well.
I said I'm not going to try and drag, you know, a theoretical model across other people's projects, which seems kind of a brutal thing to do. But I do think that. And listening to this panel was, for me, revisiting a whole set of sites of, you know, much, much earlier work that I did on commemoration, on monumental public commemoration, which forced me to kind of come to terms with the fact that all of commemoration has at heart an impossible project, which is the replacement of an absence with a presence. And that in a way that has kind of migrated to, and my the rest of my work since then has been around issues of cultural difference. And I think that the sort of issues of replacing absences with presences is central to projects of cultural difference. Equally, and I think that in a way that's the heart of the problem, because these are impossible projects. One cannot replace absences with presences. And I think what I was thinking about throughout this sort of set of voices and the spaces between them and the kind of connections that emerged in my mind is that in a way these are all around trajectories of belonging and unbelonging. That are the impetuses for all of the kind of projects that people have been talking about. And Risa and I actually had a disagreement yesterday about mirroring evil and its kind of effects. And increasingly, my sort of sense around the Holocaust industry and all of its, you know, production and museums and exhibitions and literatures and so on, is that in a bizarre way this has become a production of belonging, that this is now a permissible thing to kind of put on the cultural terrain as a manifestation of belonging to that particular culture. And I think that in a way I was thinking that those that tallied with some of Sunil's kind of complaints, and very well justified complaints, and please don't leave London and immigrate, because it would be a waste and a loss. But it seems to me that there's a question around what gets utilized as forms of belonging to a culture, sometimes through strategies of abjection and through the rehearsal of deep grievances and complaints, that is at the heart of all of this, is being called trauma, but I wouldn't call it trauma. And I think that these are the kind of the threads of connection by which certain kinds of belongings and unbelongings get established. And I think that the question that doesn't get asked around all of this, which I think is maybe also at the heart of what one of the things Vera was saying, is that when certain things become absolutely acceptable to look at, I think that the representation of the degree to which our culture is saturated with representation of the genocide of European Jewry known as the Holocaust, it starts sort of raising the question of what it is that we're not permitted to look at. For me, the great question about mirroring evil was the fact that why is it so possible, so acceptable, so accessible to look at images of the Holocaust and so inaccessible and impossible to look at images of Rwanda or, you know, or what's happening in Jenin or any of these other things, which are equally, sort of grave tragedies. And I think there's a way in which we need to run some of those questions across one another and make them talk to one another. I just came back from, I've been at Dartmouth for a month at a study institute on ethnic warfare and cultural representation with a lot of war photographers like James Nachtwey and Gilles Perez and so on. And James Nachtwey, who's not informative or illuminating about his work, said at a certain point, he said, it's not a question of empathy, it's not a question of sympathy, it's not a question of wanting to bring horror back to those who aren't sort of experiencing it firsthand. It's a decision. Every shot of every photograph is a decision. And that's the kind of thing I think needs to be brought back to this discussion.
Anyone want to take that? Sunil?
I'm not sure if I was hearing you right, Irit, but did you say complaint? Was I complaining? I don't think so, Irit, because I was complaining in 1980. I'm not complaining now. I've lived through an experience. I'm making observations just like you. I think it's very condescending for you to say I'm complaining. And it's absolutely true that all the jobs are for whites, as you very well know, because you and I live in the same town, not far from each other. And I'm just observing. I'm not complaining. Keep the damn jobs. I don't want them. Basically, under the rubric of diversity, organizations, educational institutions, public galleries are getting taxpayers' money. I'm just observing that it's all a magnificent lie, because they're not employing Asians and blacks as curators and managers. I'm very sorry, Eric. I'm not complaining. I'm observing.
Okay. Thank you for that remark. Someone has been waiting to speak for a very long time, so would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Lynn Tether from Museum Studies here in Toronto. It would be amiss not to acknowledge a ghost event that probably is in this room for some of us who live in the city. And it was an exhibition here at the Royal Ontario Museum called Into the Heart of Africa. And the controversy that emerged several months after it began, and which has become a pivotal moment in my professional life and my praxis and my teaching, and I would suggest for many of us as professionals, in which we have pathways of sometimes successfully dealing with that and in many ways not. And my point was to pick up on the earlier speakers speaking about Canvas of War, about those exhibitions which begin in one mode but move to trauma because of the groups of people, after all, those visitors, those taxpayers, those non-visitors who may have opinions about the work we do, who then come into those exhibits and read it in a different way. And the pivotal picture for the curator's choice is, of course, this blown-up illustrated London news picture with a Boer officer on a horse with a spear piercing through the shield and touching the body of the Zulu warrior and the drop of blood falling, etc., which became a pivotal iconic image for the reaction of people of color within the city, or at least a proportion of them. And so the question is, we could go on and on, and many of us have, in reading and rereading and dealing with and grappling with all of the meaning of that particular exhibit, and could argue about whether the institution itself has ever dealt with it, or recovery from it, or may indeed still be in paralysis from it.
Anyone want to answer to that? Or to the more general question of something that is moved toward trauma, but that start as something else, which was also a more generic but quite interesting aspect. And I'm sorry to say that that was our last question, because
there's one down here.
We are really out of time on
Remember, I'm going to say, I want to take the prerogative and say that this discussion is not one that can end at the
I would just like to say a few words. I won't be here tomorrow, and before closing this session on commemoration in, after all, an event that was, after all, commemorative in nature, since it's my last official tribune today, and since we just discussed history, I would like to set the record straight. My friends who organized the Museum After Modernism conference have very, very, very generously included me in the final list of co-organizers of this event, although personal circumstances have allowed me to do very little, and I mean very, very little, in this process. So I would like to thank them for their generous inclusion. At the same time, my ambiguous position, in, while, out, or vice versa, I haven't figured that out, has made me a perfect witness to the stunning level of commitment and energy that was, that went in the preparation of this event, and I don't mean just the logistics, that must have been quite something, but mostly the intellectual debate that went into the shaping of what would be addressed. I personally cannot be certain that Judith Mastai is with us today, except, of course, in the hearts of those who knew her and loved her. And I cannot even be sure that she would have loved this conference, because let's face it, after all, she was a woman who loved to disagree. But I swear that she would have enjoyed the very process that made this entire event possible. And I wish you would join me in thanking and acknowledging the work of the true organizers of this event. So, a 15-minute break, and then Griselda Pollock's lecture to end the day.